Hello, just a quick bit before this week's episode to let you know that we have a Patreon you can subscribe to if you like what we're doing here and you want more of it. You probably already knew that. We don't stop going on about it. What you didn't know is that you can currently get a little free trial, so you know exactly what you'd get as part of your subscription. You can head to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in the show notes to get your first 7 days free. All you need to do is pick which tier you'd like a free trial of. The Biggest Mates tier is the one that has all the extras in it. And then for 7 days, you are free to listen to any episode we've released in the last 6 months. You can cancel any time or just leave the subscription rolling if you like what you find. It's charged monthly. And during any month, as part of that Biggest Mates tier, you'll get ad-free episodes of this show every Monday. You'll get a brand new episode of our new Manic Street Preacher show every month. 2 episodes every month of the Ultimate Playlist, our themed playlist show, where we talk about all kinds of different music, different artists, different genres, different eras, and 1 or 2 bonus episodes every month, depending on the length of the month. That's 2 episodes every week. There's also other tiers to trial. One that is just the Manic Show and ad-free What Is Music episodes, and another that is just ad-free What Is Music episodes. But hey, if the first 7 days are free, why not try a bit of everything? Plus, all tiers include access to the exclusive subscriber-only Discord where we discuss the shows, the bands we've covered, various music topics, and loads of other stuff, including some games that the friendly community have devised themselves. So head on over to our Patreon page now to claim your free 7-day trial. Go to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in our show notes. See you there. I started my thing at 10 seconds in. Is that important to you? Does it worry you? Yeah.
It worries me.
What are your deepest fears and worries?
That Steve will experience his deepest fears and worries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's quite nice. And Steve, what are those deepest fears and worries? Just really quickly for the podcast intro.
My candles.
What's wrong with your candles? Are you afraid
that something we did off mic that will work really well.
And I'm just trying to pivot into something that will actually work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or I can just, it's up to you guys. I can just go straight into hello and welcome, if you like.
I'll tell you what I'm terrified of.
We can abandon this altogether.
Long, poisonous jellyfish.
I see what he's done. I see what he's done, and it took me a couple of seconds, and I see what he's done.
It didn't take me long.
And actually, it's very good, and actually, hello and welcome to What Is Music, a music podcast about music, and actually, we're a podcast that focuses on discographies in their entirety, and we're actually doing deep dives on one artist at an actual time. You join us in season 4, which is called... Is it actually Radiohead? A critical analysis of the history, cultural impact, and music of Radiohead. We're going through their entire career, album by album, track by track, asking questions like, does context matter when you're listening to music? Does knowing the history of an artist actually affect your appreciation of their output? And this season, we're of course asking, is it actually Radiohead? And to be clear, we're asking, is it actually Radiohead in regards to the band Radiohead? Not, is it actually Radiohead in regards to the 4th season of our podcast, which is called, Is It Actually Radiohead? And which is now actually... in your head. I'm Adam Scott Glasspool. I would include all B-sides in a reissue. I love the artistry, the emotion, and also the context that surrounds music. With me, as always, is someone who said they don't care about art or talking about art, doesn't often relate personally to music. I would include no B-sides in a reissue. It is, of course, Lucas Way.
I'd include some B-sides.
In the middle of that, we have someone who can appreciate context, art, and subject matter, and perhaps doesn't fully understand how to put those things into words, besides whether or not he likes it. Steve Murphy.
Yeah, it's like the word B-side. Yeah, that's... Oh, brilliant. Hello.
Welcome back to the podcast. Gentlemen, how are you? And all of the introductory stuff that we do.
I am Kane Coogan.
Are you?
Excellent. Yeah. The Cooganist today, I reckon.
I am feeling... Ken Coogan.
Oh. And just a quickly, like a brief update. Lucas is back in that famous quarter zip jumper that we've talked about so fondly on this podcast.
That we talked about on, I think.
Get right up to the microphone and give that a little...
I think we talked about the famous quarter zip behind the paywall.
Well, okay, if you want more quarter zip content, you know what to do, guys. But on this episode and on this feed, we're going through the entire discography of reissuers Radiohead. And today we're going to explore, discuss and dissect what the band did after A Moon-Shaped Pool, including the re-release of two of their seminal albums. Is it seminal or is it seminal?
I think it's seminal.
I don't really want to refer to something as seminal.
Also, what issues are they doing again?
They're talking about the issues.
They've got a lot of issues here. And they're you're going to re-listen to them.
And they're just doing them all over again.
Yeah, exactly. But we're doing that in order to get a little closer to answering the question, what is music? Steve, obviously, you've used the jellyfish thing. What is music?
Oh, lift.
Okay, great.
Oh, that's one of Lucas's fears. Brilliant.
I think music is some very normal songs.
It's very normal indeed. Well, we left them having released A Moon-Shaped Pool,
or as I like to call it, AMSP.
Yeah, it rolls off the tongue. AMSP. And and of course they then went on tour in support of A Moon-Shaped Pool, and that tour, you'll remember, guys, lasts from 2016 until 2018, doesn't it? It's like a 2-year tour. And then in April 2017, so we're kind of in the middle of that tour, in a few cities around the world, mysterious posters started cropping up, didn't they? It was all
in
over
2017.
The news. In 2017, very mysterious.
Were they advertising like Thor Ragnarok?
Yeah.
No, they were a bit more mysterious than that. They were black text on a white background, and they had kind of like, it was like a list of things, I guess. It was a list of sentences in block capital letters, and here's what they said. They said, less contact between rich and poor, more hostility towards the poor, more industries that exploit fear, more fear in the media, more public fear, more private security, less political participation, worse politicians. And then very big at the bottom of that, it just said, more fear. Very much a reflection of, or comment on modern society, right? I suppose.
I mean it. It sounds like a bloody Tory manifesto. If you're asking me on this
lovely
podcast.
Stuff.
That's very okay, computer, isn't it?
Well, it is. And underneath more fear, there were 2 years written, 1997 and 2017. Some people on the internet pointed out that these were very similar to the original posters for OK Computer, except those had those used the phrases from Fitter Happier instead of these new ones. And then on May the 1st, Radiohead posted
May
a cryptic...
May the 1st be with you, too.
May the 1st Good. Be with you.
Radiohead posted a cryptic video of the loading screen for an old ZX Spectrum.
They bloody love cryptic video, if you're asking me.
The ZX Spectrum was loading a program called OK Not OK, whilst what sounded like a child recited the lyrics to Climbing Up the Walls. I mean, all the stuff like, I am the toys that you leave in the basement and all of that stuff, you know.
Classic Radiohead.
The next day, they announced the reissue with a picture of a floppy disk. So they are like fully immersed.
Are they allowed to do that in advertising?
Disk. It was an S.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I'm worried about the mini disk later.
Before we get into the reissue itself, is this a weird thing for Radiohead to do? Is it unlike Radiohead?
It does seem a bit like that. It's almost like the greatest hits thing, isn't it? Like, it seems like something they weren't really part of, but then obviously they were.
Like cash in on an old release sort of
situation. Yeah. They have so far been a band that has not really looked back, only kind of looked forward into what they're gonna do next, looking for new things to do, rather than dwelling on past releases or celebrating their own past achievements. But I think what it also does is it kind of singles out OK Computer as something that even they see as being just beyond everything else, right?
Yeah.
Kind of. When they announced the reissue, they obviously announced the various editions and track lists, and we loved this shit. Broadly speaking, it was two CDs, okay? And we love CDs, don't we?
What about narrowly speaking?
Narrowly speaking, it was one CD, and that was the edited version.
It's half of OK Computer.
But most of the versions were two CDs. Yeah. The first CD was the remastered album, and I've got to say, guys, and you can't stop me, I've got to say it. Yeah. Hold me back. Oh, I've got to say, this remaster is genuinely excellent, and I didn't make you listen to it because I'm not going to make you listen to the same album again. But it's one of the best remasters I've heard. It really makes everything so much crisper, and there's like a few parts that are simply either more audible or, in one or two cases, added back into the mix.
Is there any chance I would have heard it when I listened to OK Computer? Because I just, like, you know, Spotify sometimes just serves up the newer version of a thing. It will serve up.
Probably,
you know, remastered edition
not.
Or whatever when you search the name of an album.
If only because this version of the album is quite specifically called OK Not OK, rather than like OK Computer brackets 20th anniversary edition or whatever. Because I mean, the Manics, I think we listened to the Holy Bible recently. You can now only get the 20th anniversary remaster on Spotify. You can't get the original master. You can't get the 10th anniversary remaster. You can only get the 20th. But they have it up there twice, so that's something.
Okay, and the deluxe edition with the US
Muse's,
mix as well.
You know,
sure.
the Origin of Symmetry remix 66666 that came out.
Yeah.
Spotify has already lost the plot with which one you get served up when you play a thing. You'll get the artwork for one, but you'll get a different one. You'd basically, at this point, I don't know what you will necessarily get at any given time.
And you know, Spotify's algorithm is a lot like a box of chocolates, isn't it?
Mm.
You never know what you're going to get. The second disc of OK Not OK had all 8 OK Computer B-sides, also remastered, but also 3 unreleased tracks.
That's scary.
Well, they looked to be the stars of the collection. This is why a lot of Radiohead fans would have bought it, aside from the fact that they buy everything they put out, but mainly because they were all, and we've spoken about them, infamous lost Radiohead songs. I Promise is slightly less so, but we were about to finally get official releases of Lift and Big Boots, which was now called Man of War. And guys, we've rattled on about those songs a bunch, haven't we?
They've been hanging about on the cork board. It's not a cork board, it's a pinboard.
Pinboard, oh, thank you very much to remember.
It's a chalkboard. Sorry. I think we described it as a chalkboard at one point.
Did we? Yeah. No, I think you're thinking of Radiohead's chalkboard, which is very different to our personal pinboard.
Oh, maybe.
Mm. The original album, which was called OK Computer, was released on May 21st, 1997 in Japan. Do you remember that?
As far as I'm concerned, that's my 8th birthday.
Okay, good. And, and it was released on July the 1st that year in the US. So they kind of split the difference for the reissue, which was released on June 23rd. 2017, which was very close to the original 1997 UK release date of June the 16th. I think there's a specific reason for that release date, which is that on the 20th of October 2016,
right,
Radiohead had been announced for Glastonbury Festival 2017.
Okay.
After like months and months of rumours, the Kid A bear logo was painted in the field of the pyramid stage, and then the next day the band was announced, and it was going to be like 20 years after their legendary career defining festival defining headline performance that was during the OK Computer tour, and that announcement confirmed that they would be playing on Friday, June 23rd, 2017, the
on
same day the reissue comes out. Exactly, they were playing on a Friday as well.
That's good.
Yeah, so as well as being great marketing, it looked like their Glastonbury performance would be a bit of a celebration of OK Computer as well, which I guess we'll dive into next week because that's the commentary that we're going to do, our last commentary. But first, right, on that day, June 23rd, 2017, the re-release is released. And they had actually released I Promise and Man of War as singles just before, with music videos for them. Let's dig into those unreleased tracks, starting with I Promise.
Mm-hmm.
Adam, just play that. Play the start of that song again.
Wow, he enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah,
didn't
yeah.
He? All right, okay, great. Loves it.
Yeah, I did. I did. Yeah, because again. I really enjoyed that song the first time round. Because just keep it going a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just don't leave me. It's just high and dry, isn't it?
It's similar, actually.
It's not similar, it's the same song.
Is it, though? Is
good
it, though?
Reason to keep it as a B-side, I reckon.
Yeah?
When you've ripped yourself off.
Oh, well, yeah, it's a strummed acoustic guitar, yeah.
No.
The similar right. chords.
But also, both songs have that droning low E note.
I was going to ask if it's a 12-string.
It does. It sounds very bright, but I don't know. I don't. To be honest with you, Steve, I don't know. It is a lot like High and Dry. It's quite repetitive, I think, this song.
Absolute B-side material.
Yep.
It's kind of absolute B-side material.
Just plods along. Just kind of plods along.
But does it plod along?
Or is it driving?
Does it... does it plod along pleasingly for you? Is it pleasant or what's going on?
Just perfectly acceptable. At best.
I'm obviously very positive about Radiohead.
Mm.
Some would accuse me of a Radiohead bias. I hate this.
Do you really?
Is it because it sounds like a worse version of High and Dry?
No, it's not. That had never occurred to me.
Occurred to you.
I'm so sorry, Lucas. I'm so
in
sorry.
In your 34 so years yeah. of age,
yeah,
at no point did it occur to you.
I'm 33, I think. Well, I'm 34 when this comes
yeah,
out.
Yeah,
in, your th- in your 34 years of existence, at no point did you consider that it sounds the same as High and Dry?
No, I didn't, but I think that's because I don't spend, one, a lot of time listening to High and Dry, and I definitely don't spend a lot of time listening to I Promise. When the track listing was announced, I was like, oh, Man of War! Oh, Lift! And I Promise is also on the CD. this is the first official, I'm giving it the first of this season, the official Adam says, this can fuck off.
Really?
This is the only Radiohead track where I'm like, nah, get fucked.
No, you said that about Fit Happier.
No, I don't believe that I did. I don't think I've said it about anything. We'd have to check the tapes. We'd have to check the tapes. I don't believe I've said it about anything, but this is the one. I'm livid about this. I don't care about it. It just, it's just a dreary old bollocks fest, isn't it?
Bollocks fest 2023. You got your tickets?
I'm going, yeah.
Yeah?
350
quid. I'm not going
this year. Unbelievable.
I'm not going this year.
That's bollocks. I have got that it's such a tradish song and structure. It's very much like a singer-songwriter. And that, with every line having the same refrain of I Promise at the end of it. And I was surprised it's from the OK Computer era because, yeah, it sounds very The Bends. But then,
you've got to remember,
yeah,
it's recorded during the OK Computer
yes,
era.
Yes, exactly. So they would have written it before.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was written in probably like 1995, 1996. It was played on the tour for The Bends. And then worked on during OK Computer. And it was later worked on for Kid A as well, probably in a very different sort of guise. Or maybe not, as we will kind of touch on a bit later. But this is the OK Computer version. I don't care about it. It's also the one track, the one of the three new tracks that they played live around the time of the reissue.
Right.
I know, yeah. I mean, so not a promising start to disc two.
I think it's...
In my opinion.
Very pleasant, and it's very wide and expansive when it opens up a bit. It isn't very exciting, but like the lyrics are a bit fairly interesting. Like on the surface, it seems like quite sweet that he'll never leave her, whatever, or whoever he's talking about. But actually, it's just a story of just giving up and staying in a bad relationship just because that's what you should do with the even when the ship is wrecked. I promise, tie me to the rotten deck. I promise. It's something.
The tantrums and the chilling chat.
If you say that in a New Zealand accent, though, it's not as pleasant. Time to the rotten dick. I promise. Oh,
okay, that's okay. But when are you going to say it in a New Zealand accent?
Yeah, it's a bit of nothing, isn't it?
It's a B-side. It's a song that I think deservedly got a bit lost somewhere along the way.
Wish it stayed lost.
No, not necessarily. It's an interesting little curio, and you know I'm all about interesting little curios, but I certainly don't pop it on.
You want it to fuck
not nearly
off
as much as I do the the.
Yeah, you did just say fuck off.
You can't say you're glad it was off. Found, but fuck off. Imagine if like there was this lost child. Oh, thank God you're back, but you're a bit shit. Can you fuck off?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, look, it's obviously the weakest of the three.
Yeah,
I think. And you know, after saying, you know, this song's been lost for 20 years and here it is, I kind of wanted a bit more. I think I might even prefer it if they'd put it third.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Because these are tracks 1, 2, 3.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. But the second one, Man of War. Drift all your life from ocean to ocean. Search the whole world for drunken confessions and hijacked affairs. Will just make you more
on, Steve, go off about jellyfish and stuff.
You aware of the Portuguese Man of War?
Yes.
They look like the Hanar from Mass Effect, don't they, Adam?
They do, yeah. That's
but they've true. Got long, long, very long tendrils behind them, and they float along the surface, and they drift from ocean to ocean, yeah?
Do they?
Well, probably yeah. The same ocean.
I mean, I was going to say, yeah. Have you known them to pass from one ocean to another, specifically?
Do you know what? I've known that.
He's not digging up any great sort of stuff here. It's obviously called Man of War because of the drifting in the ocean and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But you guys know the context behind this. This was part of a very lengthy discussion we had only a couple of weeks ago.
Something about big boots.
Yeah.
Yeah. He says big boots at the end, and big boots is the one that's been on our pinboard for a while.
Big sexy boots.
You guys do not remember.
I don't remember anything at any point.
Just all vibes. This is the song that they submitted for James Bond.
What? Oh, and then they went nah, and then they did Spectre, but they'd missed the boat.
Yes, yeah. They went
a
nah,
boat which is out looking at Man of War.
Yeah. Jellyfish.
Yeah.
They said nah because it had been written a long time ago, and so it wasn't eligible for an Academy Award.
I think that is valid. I probably said that at the time. I say it again. Valid. I think Bond songs should be written for Bond.
Is it? This is such a Bond song, though.
It's a bit.
I can see it. Yeah.
It's not like immensely Bond.
Okay, I'm just going to play a little bit more. I'm just going to play a little.
I forgot about that context. And when I was doing notes, at no point did I think, this sounds really Bondy, like I have done with other bondage-based songs.
Just going to play a little bit more then, just towards the end. The strings following the lead guitar part there.
What Beatles song does that sound exactly like? It's really
all of
bugging
them?
Me. You're fine. Okay, yeah.
I know what you mean. There is...
All Beatles.
Oh, that is something. I think it's something off Abbey Road. The strings aren't significant enough in the song. It's more... I would call this a guitar song before
for sure.
Song.
For sure.
The Chris Cornell one, very good.
Yeah, I know. And I knew you were going to bring up the Chris Cornell one. And when we do a bonus episode about the Bond songs, I will tell you that I love that song. I don't think it's a very Bondy song.
I think this is a great Bond song. The strings, by the way, are the actual Royal Philharmonic Orchestra.
That's very cool.
Because when you're working on a Bond song, you get to do stuff like that.
Yeah,
basically. Yeah. It's so.
But they weren't working on a Bond. But they weren't working on a Bond song, though.
Yeah, this is a new recording of it. They didn't submit a 1997 recording. They submitted a 2015 recording of a 1996 song.
So, and so they would. And so when they were going away and going to go and do that, right?
Yeah.
Were they not given the rules? One of which being, don't do an old song. It has to be original.
Get in the orchestra. Submitted it. Got an email back.
Got in an orchestra. All that faff. And then they were like, no, you missed a key rule. Rule number one.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not a rule, is it? That's a rule of the producers who want an Academy Award. It's not a rule of the Bond franchise.
Right.
How many, though, are not original?
I've got no
idea. The minority, I would say.
I've got no idea.
Was it originally called Big Bond and actually it was just a typo?
No, but it was originally written for that Avengers movie in the 90s. And so they went in going like, right, let's write a Bond theme as almost like a pastiche of Bond themes, which is why this is, it's quite Bond. I mean, I think some of it is 1997 and other bits of it are new. The strings are new. The vocal is obviously more recent Tom. He's giving it a bit of the spin that you wouldn't hear in 1997, you know, like the hijacked affairs. That he's not doing that in 1997.
I forgot how much of a rock band they used to be. Because they spent so long covering bleeps and bloops and albums recorded on decks and all this other business.
Yeah,
I kind of forgot that they are just a bit of a rock band in the early days.
And the fact that this is recorded in 2015, proof, if proof be need be, that Radiohead can still do it, you know?
But they're playing an old song. I wonder if they could they still write a new original rock album?
Well, they wrote new parts for this, I suppose.
Rock! You've got to put your best Jeremy Clarkson when you do it, yeah.
I think it's great. I think this is really great. I think you could see it as a Bond theme, maybe even before you see Spectre as a Bond theme. This is much more in... It's interesting you brought up the Beatles. It's much more in the kind of live and let die kind of Duran Duran sort of mode, isn't it?
I would like the next Bond song to be a bit more of a big banger, because the
it's
last
all
three
slow
have
piano
been,
ballads,
the last three
they?
Have been piano, but you've had the last three have been Skyfall, the Sam Smith one, and Billie Eilish, No Time to Die, and all cut from a similar cloth, especially the latter two.
Wouldn't have this been such a nice change-up, right? This would have been such a nice change-up. And of course, there's the thing that Bond is the man of war. And there's lyrics in there about him being, like, dressed for the kill and all of that kind of stuff. I think it's so entrenched.
And the poisoned dwarf.
I don't think that there's... Oh, no, there is. Yes, there is. Poisoned dwarf. Well, that's obviously Man with the Golden Gun.
Exactly.
Because of Odd Job.
Knick-Knack. You're thinking...
Oh, Knick-Knack. Sorry, mixing up Knick-Knack and Odd Job. Did you know, fun fact about GoldenEye 007, the legendary game for
N64? Yeah, go on.
You know, Odd Job's really small in it, to the point where any self-respecting players wouldn't use him because it's it's borderline cheating to use him. He was that model, the reason that model is so small is because they mixed it up with Knick-Knack, and so it's extra short. Because, like, Odd Job's a bit small, but he's not, you know... He doesn't have dwarfism. He's just a bit of a smaller man.
Yeah.
But they mix it up with Knick-Knack, and so that's why Odd Job in the game is so tiny.
That's embarrassing, isn't it?
That's fun fact.
Do you know what? That's one of the most fun facts I've ever heard in my life.
There you go.
Yeah. Bond song. Anyway, Lift.
I didn't think about that, but good song.
Thank you.
So that synth bit, that...
Let me really quickly disabuse you of a notion. That is a guitar part.
All right. That bit is just so, so normal.
Yeah, it's not very Radiohead, is it?
It's so normal. The only word I can use to describe it is just like, stick it on a song by like Keen, probably would be fine.
Well, what's do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do?
What's that?
Coldplay.
That is Talk by Coldplay, but it's actually... They took it from Kraftwerk as a sample.
Oh. Also, that's a good Coldplay song.
It's fine.
It's just very... again, I think this is quite a normal song. It's just like a bit of a mainstream Radiohead song from 1997.
Yes, but
one of the
also...
less weird ones, one of the more normal ones. But also, what is the deal with this song? Because I know we've talked about it.
Yeah.
But it had a music video...
From 2017, yeah.
From 2017, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've just talked about it previous, because in my head I was like, well, why did this B-side get a music video in 1997 or something then?
Well, it's not even a B-side. Lift is the white whale for Radiohead fans, basically. This is the lost song. I know we focused on True Love Waits, but you could have easily focused on Lift. There's just less examples of Lift. Because basically... when they started playing it live in 1996, like Ed has talked about the vibe that it had, and they played it a lot on the Alanis Morissette tour. Do you remember when they, in 1996, when they, before OK Computer, they toured with Alanis Morissette? They were a support
act.
I
love the idea that Radiohead supported Alanis
Morissette. I know. But they talked about how this one song, when they played it live, the crowd would really react to. And when people heard bootlegs of it, they were like, wow. What an incredible song. And what you've got to remember is people hadn't heard OK Computer. People had heard The Bends and were like, oh, OK, they're going to do more of the huge, anthemic, epic bait stuff that is kind of on The Bends. It's kind of along the same lines of Street Spirit in some ways, where mm-hmm. it's got the big, epic sort of backing vocals. What Ed has said about it is that it was their attempt to do A Design for Life by Manic Street Preachers.
Really?
The big, huge, epic song that would be their kind of hit single. It's huge fucking single bait, isn't it?
What year did Everything Must Go come out?
96.
I just don't think of it being older than OK Computer.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? It's huge fucking single bait. And Radiohead like felt the pressure to have such... a huge hit single coming off the back of The Bends. Remember that quote from around the time where they said, we were told if we did The Bends Part 2, we'd sell millions upon millions upon millions of records. So we set about to not do that.
Yeah.
Similar to this, they had this huge single in the wings just waiting to be released. And Phil said, it just doesn't represent what we wanted to do at the time. And Ed has said Lift had like this magic about it. But when we got to the studio and did it, it felt like having a gun to your head. That there was so much pressure, and they just couldn't get the studio version to sound like that magical live version.
I'm guessing it then just became a white whale just because it just been so long. It had just been ages, and it was a known thing, and people just knew it was there. And so regardless of at that point, whether it still represented what people wanted out of their Radiohead,
which
by this point is more bleeps and more bloops. It's just the fact that it's still there on the pinboard. Or the blackboard, on the whiteboard.
Pinboard,
blackboard, singing in the dead of night.
That sounds like the Beatles.
I suppose
it sounds like the
also,
song Pinboard.
There's also this like pinboard wizard. They seem to be. I just had to get it out of my head.
You had to exercise yourself with that.
Otherwise, it's going to be in there all night, guys. All night.
The power of Christ compels you.
I suppose if you're not intimately aware of the inner workings of Radiohead and that they're such fucking like contrarians and stuff, a lot of people must also be like, well, they've got Lift, why wouldn't you just release Lift? It's like this big fucking single. And it's also quite like, I think the lyrics are quite kind of universal in some ways whilst also being personal, which is what people fucking want in their lyrics. I think like Tom name checks himself, which is very cute. You've been stuck in a lift, which is obviously, you know, that feeling of being trapped, which everybody everybody empathizes with. Then he says, "We've been trying to reach you, Tom." It's almost kind of like,
are you sure they're not doing a reference there to ground control to Major Tom?
Could be.
It's like, we've been trying to reach you, Tom, because the signal's dropped out.
Why not? Why not?
Ground control. What's the song called?
It's the Space Oddity. But there's also references to Talking Heads, like, this is the place is in there, and then he goes on to say it won't ever hurt again, and it's just it has a lot of universal stuff in it. He refers to himself as Squirt at the end as well, which is what a lot of people called him at school because he was so little and shy. And he tells himself at the end, "Today is the first day of the rest of your days, so lighten up, Squirt." Which is it's good little stuff. There's some stuff in here.
The harmonies in this song are lovely. There's a
big
few,
Eds, isn't there?
Oh, the biggest Eds. Yeah, it's well good.
Yeah, it's Ed Pick.
All those voices at the same time doing all different things is really nice. It doesn't fit on OK Computer at all. Where would you put this, right? Not at all. So you can I can understand. I mean, it's got all those references to, it's probably the most out of the three that maybe, because it's, you know, air conditioning and technology and stuff. Like, it's a bit more, you know, the humdrum and the buzzing of the fridge kind of stuff. But
it does have that stuff. Yeah. It's interesting you say, like, it wouldn't fit on OK Computer. They made that call very early on. I remember reading about Ed saying, like, if we had not immediately discarded Lift, which is what they did. They didn't work on it very hard. They went, no, this isn't the vibe. We're going to get rid of it. If they had followed Lift to its logical conclusion, they reckoned that OK Computer would have sounded completely different. It maybe would have been the Bends part two. Yeah. You know? And I love the Bends. Don't do it. I love the Bends, but what makes the Bends special is that it's a singular kind of entity. And that's you can kind of say that about all of the Radiohead albums, is that what's special about them is they didn't do that again, you know?
Kid A and Anisia.
Even those are quite different albums. They are. They're like, one is very jazzy and the other one's very cold, and one is very warm and one is much more electronic and one is much more full band.
Here's something. All three of these... Here's something.
Hey, you hear about this? Is there too much Jay Leno on this podcast for British young people to really appreciate?
Well, that's fine, Adam, because British young people don't listen to this podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's all 40-year-old Americans these days.
Hey, man.
Howdy, partners.
Because you said no teenagers listen, and we had a few angry teenagers get hold of us and be like, hold on, man, I listen to your fucking podcast.
Okay, we have a few teenagers.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lit.
That's totally rad.
That's amazing.
That's giving good vibes.
Yeah. That's serving cunt or something.
What are you doing? What is that?
Yeah, that's an expression.
It's an expression I've heard. It's something I've heard.
Anyway, here's something. Can't not.
Hey.
All three songs reference the ocean. Yeah? I promise when the ship is wrecked, Tommy's
I tell you what,
dick.
Steve, you were right. That is indeed something.
That's something. So Man of War, and then in Lift, in the belly of a whale at the bottom of the ocean.
But does Man of War reference the ocean? Because are they actually talking about the jellyfish in the song?
He says ocean to ocean in it.
Okay.
It's probably the most one.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't read the lyrics, so I didn't know that.
Okay, then. All right.
Okay, well, fine. We'll move on then.
That's something. Them re-releasing their most famous, biggest, most successful album, coupled with the fact that they headlined Glastonbury Festival on the day it was released, which was broadcast to millions and millions of people, means that at that point in like June 2017, they are fully in the zeitgeist at that moment. And it meant that OK Computer hit number two in the album charts. This reissue went to number two in the charts in the UK. It beat the new Imagine Dragons album, and Imagine Dragons are huge.
That's massive. Imagine.
It was second only to the latest Ed Sheeran album, and it was the best-selling album in independent record stores for the entire year.
That tracks. That sounds about right, doesn't it?
That's crazy, yeah. though. It's a reissue.
And I bet they're largely on vinyl.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, guys, there was a special edition that you could order. Of course there was.
Yeah.
But it just got delivered in like July instead of June. I'll just grab it. And Lucas, you just can talk about the medal that you just put on.
I just put a medal around my neck.
You just wanted to bring that up. I just wanted to bring that up. 10K medal. It's very nice.
Got a medal.
Not gold.
I thought I'd just show it off.
That's the front. That's the front.
Well, it's just black.
It's not. Look, you can very faintly see a design.
I can see that.
For life.
That's good.
And the whole artwork for it is the cover of OK Computer, but burned. They've burned the front of OK Computer. And that's what it all is in the digital release as well.
Cool. And, of course, it's OK to not be OK.
It's a big box, guys. It's a big box.
There's big boots, Adam.
Big bonds. Big bond.
Okay. How am I going to do this? Fucking merch quarters on a digital fucking whatever. Right. The album came on double vinyl, with the B-sides and the extras across one other vinyl, so three LPs, and they came in this big hardback book that's got all of the like the artwork and the lyrics and stuff in it, yeah?
Yeah.
See that?
Yeah, that's lovely. There's all like, loads pages of artwork from Stanley.
Yeah, loads of stuff, and this is like some of it's the original stuff, some of it's new stuff, but it also came with like a 48-page sketchbook, which featured lots of stuff from Tom and Stanley. There you go. That's like whatever it is.
If found.
Lots of artwork for the reissue. And a tiny recreation of the notebook that Tom used to write OK Computer. So this is all, you can see that it's reproduced his actual scribbles. It's not typed out and stuff.
Right.
And it's got all his little doodles and, you know, very, very interesting. It's got all like his notes and everything. Lots of unused stuff as well, but the star of like the package was this, the white, unbranded C90 cassette.
I mean, on your camera, it is so bright that it looks like it's glowing.
Yeah. On the cassette were outtakes, demos, bits of studio chatter, little clips of rehearsals of songs. You know all the stuff that I played on the OK Computer episode? All of the delay experiments and the noises that they made in the studio, they're from this cassette.
Right.
And it also featured like demos of some songs that we never even knew existed, a song called Attention, which we'd never heard of before in our lives, rehearsal takes of songs, early versions, and OK Computer recorded versions of the National Anthem, Nude, True Love Waits, and Motion Picture Soundtrack. The OK Computer demo for Motion Picture Soundtrack is especially beautiful. I'll play you a little clip of it. Here's the thing.
Red wine and sleeping pill, help me get back to your arms. Cheap and sad films help me get where I belong.
That's very beautiful. You can only get that on the cassette. And I've never played the cassette, but you know, the downloads are out there, guys. The downloads are out there.
Yeah.
But it's all mixed together into a demented sound montage that kind of sums up the OK Computer sessions. It's great. They were all taken from hours and hours of Tom's original mini discs, which he made during those sessions in 1996 and 1997. This edition was promoted with a video of it being unboxed by none other than Chieftain Muse. That's an amusing video if you want to watch
back.
And you're right, yeah, they released a music video for Lift a few months after everything came out. In 2017, and Lucas, you'll like this, Radiohead teamed up with none other than Hans Zimmer to create a new version of Bloom, which is now called Ocean Bloom in this version. There's a really interesting documentary and lots of little clips about Hans Zimmer and Radiohead meeting and them talking about how much they admire each other and talking about orchestration and stuff like that. But the original song Bloom was inspired by Blue Planet, So it only made sense that for Blue Planet 2, which came out in 2017, they would tap into this song and the person who scored it to do a new version of Bloom called Ocean Bloom. Do you want to hear a bit of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucas, I imagine you've already heard it, right?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Oh.
Does it go blah?
Yeah, that's it all the way through.
Oh, I've heard this on Blue Planet. Yes, of course I've heard it.
Is it the opening credits?
I think it's the very opening montage.
Yeah.
The ocean covers 60% of the planet's surface.
Sounds and a bit like Admiral Ackbar when you do
some
it.
Some of the most unique life. Much of it is still undiscovered. Yes, of course I've heard this, because I remember being like, it's Radiohead.
It's so good. Let me skip forward a little bit. Hang on. Absolute Lucas bait.
Yeah, guess what? It's probably one of my favourite Radiohead songs.
Massive.
That
is
if
massive.
That was if that was eligible for the top tens, it'd probably be in it.
Do you know what? Right?
No, Adam. That was a question. Is that eligible
of course
for
it's not.
The top ten?
Of course
10?
It's not. Don't be silly. The interestingly, you might have heard that sounds a bit weird, and that's because it's taken from the trailer, and the uploader has had to work to remove voiceover and stuff like that and cobble bits together because they've never released the version of
right.
it. You can only hear it on the fucking TV show. There is no high quality version of it. Hans Zimmer, Radiohead, you've released everything else.
Yeah.
Release this, please, I'm begging you.
I'm tremendously familiar with that phenomenon because, you know, me being me, it's a lot of times I'll hear a bit of music in a trailer and go, fucking hell, I love that.
Yeah.
And very often it's something that isn't unique for the trailer and someone's had to upload it and they've put up a version where they tried their best to chop out all the bits.
So the two things that they people don't have access to is Pop is Dead and that.
Yeah, two different qualities of soul,
yeah,
aren't they?
So similar, right, yes. Similar song.
Anyway, also in 2017, Phil Selway contributed the score for the film Let Me Go. But there's also Phil Selway written songs on there. It's interesting. We maybe should have covered this separately, but also Phil himself doesn't count it as part of his trilogy of solo albums. So even he regards it as something that's a bit separate. I'll play you a little bit of stuff from it.
Waited for you to come back, you never came. I called out for you, you pushed me away. A secret, a lie that won't stop and never go.
Kind of very in keeping with Phil's stuff, right?
What a gentle voice.
It's so gentle. It's nice. The whole soundtrack's really good. There's some string stuff on there. There's some instrumental stuff. There's some ambient stuff. It's nice, but we're not going to cover it as its own kind of thing. Also in 2017, Radiohead were nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame!
Ow!
In their first year of eligibility. They were not admitted that year, but they were nominated again in 2018, and they were then voted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2018. Tom and Johnny expressed a little disdain, or perhaps uninterest in the whole thing. I think Johnny questioned what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was even for. What was the point of it? But on the night, who do you think rocks up to accept it and make a speech?
Ed.
Of course it's Ed.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Ed's going to get into his little Hall of Fame. It's great.
Loves it.
It's Ed and Phil, who I like to refer to as Team Nice. Yeah. The nicest members of Radiohead. they get introduced and inducted by fucking David Byrne of Talking Heads, one of Radiohead's biggest influences. David Byrne. Spends his speech just praising Radiohead, saying how inventive and stuff they are. And then Ed and Phil make a speech, and Ed talks about how much it means to him and how grateful he is to have been on the journey with the rest of the band, who he refers to as his brothers, whom he loves very much. And it's just really nice. It's just really nice. I share the same kind of what's the point of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame kind of thing, but I'm happy for Ed that he's in there. You know, that's good for him. He loves that shit, right?
Yeah, he loves it.
We'll be in there one day, and then he won't think it's pointless.
Yeah, I think you guys should go up and accept, and I'll spurn it. I won't even be there.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm gonna go up there and go, let's rock.
Yeah,
and then they'll play a clip of our book. Like, what would we do in your live? Zip.
It'll be like Smashy and Nicey. I go, Bachman, Turner, Overdrive, let's rock.
Okay, lovely. Also in 2018, Colin Greenwood contributes bass to two other people's albums.
I forgot about Colin.
The album, boo! The album Amir by Tamino, a Belgian-Egyptian musician, features Colin Greenwood on bass. And the solo album from Supergrass frontman Gaz Coombs, the album which is called World's Strongest Man. Gaz Coombs put together a whole band for that album, and Colin is the bassist.
Such a normal man's name. Gaz Coombs is such not a rock and roll name.
Also in 2018, Johnny is nominated for an Oscar for his score for Phantom Thread, which is cool. Right, so as I was saying, for that OK Computer reissue, you'll remember that the supplemental recording studio stuff was taken from Tom's original mini discs. And in June 2019, for the first time since Hail to the Thief in 2003, something of Radiohead's gets leaked, kind of. Here's something that got leaked, kind of. The mass production nature of the OK Computer reissue meant that a lot of people were involved in putting it together. Very, very unlike Radiohead's last three albums, which were all confined to that core group of people who would then almost kind of leak it themselves, right? They put it up for download, and then the physical edition would come much, much later. It's not what they did for OK Computer. The thing that gets leaked is all of those mini discs.
Right.
There were 18 mini discs, totaling 16 to 17 hours. I think 16 and a bit hours of material from the OK Computer era. The person who received the material, or was in possession of the material, who was known as their online name Zimbra, did not kind of outright leak it initially. Zimbra said he got hold of it by trading it for unreleased Beatles recordings. Ed O'Brien said that Radiohead's cloud archive had been hacked, but it's entirely likely that it was hacked and then Zimbra received it off the person who hacked it. Reports vary from person to person. Radiohead reported that Zimbra had demanded a ransom of $150,000 to not release the recordings. But an investigation by Pitchfork turned up that actually Zimbra was likely going to sell it piecemeal, because that's how the bootleg market works. Did you guys kind of know this?
No.
When you get hold of, say, unreleased Radiohead recordings or unreleased Beatles recordings, you sell them song by song. You don't go like, who wants the whole thing? People will bid on... Like, so there's a version of Lift that is supposedly the Holy Grail version of Lift that I think would have sold for $1,000 in its own right. You'd pay $1,000 just to own that one song, and then you can make a decision about whether or not you put it online.
You don't own it, because it's not... I mean, this is an argument for... This is a bit of an argument for NFTs. That you don't, because they'll send you a copy, but the person that you bought it off has still got a copy, and they could sell it to you and then go, cheers, and now I'm going to put it on YouTube.
Right, but there's a...
And there's no legal recourse that person can really take.
No, absolutely not. It's all illegal because it's stolen material.
Exactly. So, but like, lol.
There's a gentleman's agreement that the person then deletes it from their hard drive or whatever.
No,
you know,
no, yeah. There's no friends in love and it's piracy.
It's likely that Zimbra estimated the full value of everything that was on that leak at $150,000. Either way, unhappy with that set of circumstances, Radiohead kind of went, fuck you, and then just released all the mini discs themselves. They just went, great, if you're going to blackmail us for 16 and a half hours of our recordings, we'll just release the 16 and a half hours of recordings. So all 18 discs were made available on Radiohead's Bandcamp page. They were available for 18 days and they cost £18. And all of the proceeds went to the environmentalist action group Extinction Rebellion. They raised about £500,000 for them. Which I think is interesting. It's kind of a cool thing to do, to just kind of go, nah, we'll do it, actually. Here is the Holy Grail lift. Broadly the same, but it's definitely got a punchier kind of live feel to it. The recorded version has a bit more of a laid back kind of thing going on. That's on disc 15, about 9 minutes in.
Is it released as just one long audio thing?
No, it was released as 18 long audio things ranging from about 50 to 1 hour each track.
Yeah, so it's not broken up with this is a bit of, this is lift, this is, oh cool, okay.
It's broken up into discs. So it's like 18 tracks long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll ask you something.
Yeah.
Did Johnny go to the Oscars that year?
Yeah.
But he didn't want to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No, but he'll go to the Oscars.
Yeah.
I mean, the Oscars, I think the Oscars is cooler than the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
The Oscars isn't cool.
It's not cool, but there's something gently lame about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, I'd rather hang out with Steven Spielberg than Axl Rose. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, so the mini, I mean, I learned about all of that while listening to a lovely conversation between Adam Buxton and Ed O'Brien recently.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's great. And it, just hearing Ed just hear about that stuff, he's like, oh, yeah, fuck. Seem nice.
Later that year, on October the 4th, 2019, to be exact, Ed releases his first ever piece of solo music in the form of a single. And we wouldn't usually shout this out, to be honest, but Ed's solo career is kind of our one unknown quantity that we've got left, really. And I know, Lucas, you made a prediction off-air about what you thought Ed's solo music would sound like. Can you remember what prediction you made?
I think I probably said it would just be pretty normal rock.
You said it would be acoustic singer-songwriter stuff in the same vein as Phil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you're like, you think now normal rock music for normal people.
Normal rock.
What do you think, Steve? You might have a bit more of a conception about it.
I haven't heard it, but I'm going to use one word that I've heard it might be a bit like, and that's cosmic.
Okay. Oh, that's probably what he said on his interview, right?
It is,
He probably called it cosmic. Yeah. Okay, of course he did. Yeah. He did. He was probably high as a kite.
Is it cosmic?
I'm going to play you a little bit of the first single, just because the first single doesn't appear on the album. So you might as well hear a little clip of it. Here we go. It's called Santa Teresa, and he doesn't go by Ed O'Brien. He goes by EOB.
Thank you.
you let me know when you want me to stop it, I guess. It's sort of this for 5.5 minutes.
I feel like that'll do.
Okay, cool.
I'll tell you what, though. Cosmic.
It's not cosmic, man.
Not what I expected.
Okay.
Adam, that must be your absolute fucking jam.
We'll talk about it on our EOB episode, I suppose. Sure. It's interesting that he calls himself EOB. We'll talk about it on that episode. He gets his own episode. Every member gets their own episode. And so, you know, Ed is not going to get lumped in with other solo albums. We're going to talk about Earth a little bit separately. In January 2020, Radiohead launched the Radiohead Public Library. And we know about this, don't we?
We know about this. We've used this. We've got our library cards.
It completely replaced their official website. It is a single web page split into album eras, and on it is everything. Every album to stream, bonus discs, standalone singles, every music video, full live shows from each era, artwork and photos from each era, things like a PDF of the King of Limbs newspaper, the blips from Kid A, the video vignettes from A Moon-Shaped Pool, playlists that the members of Radiohead have made over the years, all of their webcasts, so much stuff, and it's all free. It's a collection of everything they've ever done in varying degrees of curiosity and interest, I suppose. And it's all just there for free at radiohead.com.
Is Meeting People as Easy on there?
Yeah, in its entirety.
Is
Pop Is Dead isn't on there.
There's one thing that isn't on there, and it's Pop Is Dead. Yeah.
Is the
there's
most, no exact, is the is most exciting exotic lion mouth.
The most yes, exciting lion mouth.
Yeah.
Everything's there, always the same.
Everything is there. It's crazy. Which I think maybe tells you a bit about where the band are. I don't know.
It shows that they are financially stable.
Definitely shows that, yes.
Independently although, wealthy.
What I will say is also each era has a little bit that you can click on that will take you to recreations of that era's t-shirts that you can buy for 30 quid. Thank you very much.
So, lovely.
So there's that as well. Radiohead abandoned their plans to tour in 2021 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't know if you remember this. There was a bit of a pandemic that was going on for a couple of years, and it's fully stopped now. No one has ever got COVID since then.
2021?
Yeah, that's when they were going to tour.
That makes me feel more confident that they haven't broken up. Because that's Doesn't quite it? Recently. That's yes. quite recently, actually.
That's, yeah, it's a year and a half ago. And that's another hinge point. Remember we were talking about hinge points? If they hadn't cancelled their 2021 tour, then I don't think Phil dives into album 3. I don't think Ed dives into album 2 where he is now. I don't think The Smile exists if they tour in 2021. It's interesting. Over the pandemic, once a week, Radiohead released a new full live show for people to live stream and talk to each other. It was cool. Like Radiohead Thursdays. Every Thursday there'd be a new live show you could watch.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Nice.
Also, Mental, we're already up to date.
I know, right? Like we're getting pretty close. We're getting pretty close. This is in fact our last Radiohead episode. On April the 1st, 2021.
Well, final thoughts, music videos.
We got final thoughts. On today's episode, I'd like to talk to you about Buzzsprout, the user-friendly podcast hosting for non-techie people. I think that if this podcast has achieved anything, it's showing that literally anybody can start a podcast. Do you need any previous experience? No. Do you need top-of-the-range audio equipment? No. Do you need entertaining or insightful content? Absolutely not. But there is one thing that you will need, and that's podcast hosting. Or somewhere to store your podcast and deliver them to all of those podcast places, like the one where you're listening to this now. So if you're thinking about starting a podcast, just do it. We here at Big Mates Enterprises use Buzzsprout to host and publish our podcast because it's the best and easiest way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed on all the major podcast directories within minutes of finishing your recording. That's Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Castbox, Pocket Cast, Podbean, Podcast Addict. The list goes on and on. The other thing we've found is that not only do you get useful and easy to understand statistics about how well your podcast is doing, but also that the support team is super helpful with somebody always on hand to answer questions and help our podcast succeed. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message to the world, and you'll get a great-looking podcast website, audio players that you can drop into other websites, detailed analytics to see how people are listening, tools to promote your podcasts, and much, much more. But wait, because the more is now. Because if you follow the link in our show notes, when you sign up, it lets Buzzsprout know that we sent you. And do you know what that gets you? $20 worth of credit when you sign up for a paid plan. And that warm feeling in your stomach, knowing that not only are you on your way to podcast greatness, but that you've helped support this show too. So if you're starting your podcast, or you're looking to move your podcast, use Buzzsprout and follow our link in the show notes. Back to the episode. On April 1st, 2021, Radiohead joined TikTok. Yep. Initially, it was very characteristically cryptic, but featured Chieftain Muse engaging with trending dances from a little homemade Radiohead studio. And in the middle of that stuff was a video of Chieftain Muse trying to sellotape copies of Kid A and Amnesiac together, which obviously spurred the rumours that they were going to reissue those.
That's good.
Those videos slowly morphed into things that looked like leaked security footage of Tom and Stanley having business meetings with Chieftain Muse to discuss the level of engagement on the channel and how it was slowly declining over time, and how Chieftain Muse had promised them that it was going to be a good idea, but that frankly it wasn't good enough.
It's really funny. And it's really good.
Being funny, and I still don't understand what Chieftain Muse is.
No one does. Nobody does. But it's provocative. It gets the people going. And then the channel came to an end with the announcement that Radiohead would be re-releasing Kid A and Amnesiac as a single package. Now look, this gets real twisty, okay? And I'm expecting you to follow along with this and not to get too confused by it, okay? I think this is on par, if not slightly more confusing, with how many CDs and or DVDs there may or may not be in Hullabaloo by Muse.
Oh, God. Okay? Now I give up.
So... there's a lot of parts to it. It is announced in many, many packages and has a lot of stuff going on. Firstly, what's the reissue called?
Kid Amnesia. Kid Amnesia. There's no ack. There's no
C. There's no C in it, okay? It's not Kid Amnesiac. Yeah. It's not the two albums. It's Kid Amnesia.
There is specifically a space, isn't there?
There is, yes.
So it's not Kid Amnesia.
Nope.
No.
Kid Amnesia.
Capital M as well. And then Amnesia.
Yeah.
The CD version, which we can kind of see as like the base version, that's probably the version most people would get. It was three CDs. CD 1 was Kid A. CD 2 was Amnesiac. Neither of them were remastered. They are not different to the original releases of the album.
Okay.
CD3 is Kid Amnesiae. Okay, so an E instead of where the C should be but isn't. Yeah?
No, you lost me.
So it's Kid Amnesiae. And that is an album in its own right that kind of splits the difference between the bonus disc of the OK Computer reissue and the cassette of the OK Computer reissue. It has never heard before songs, but it also has alternate versions, demo versions, and things like just the strings of How to Disappear Completely, or just the strings of Pyramid Song on their own.
So this is surprising.
Mm.
If you say that is considered like almost its own album, I'm very surprised we're not covering that in its entirety as a sort of standalone bit of album.
I'm not a monster. All right.
Well, you kind of are, though.
Yeah, we are a monster.
But it's also got bits of studio noise, and all the songs blur into each other. It's essentially one long string of music, very purposely sequenced and arranged. It's kind of its own album, but we've just picked out the highlights, haven't we, basically? I've picked out the three things that I think would be of most interest to you, and I'll shout out another one as well, but we'll get into it in a bit. The vinyl was separate and came in its own hardback book with lots of artwork. It was still part of Kid Amnesia, but it was called The Scary Book. But Scary had two R's. So it was The Scary Book, I guess.
And how did you feel about that?
Too scary for me.
Yeah.
I actually didn't buy it because there were two kind of limited edition packages, and I opted for...
Here he goes.
The Kid Amnesiette. which is the whole thing. Yeah, it's split across two, if I can open it, it's split across two cassettes.
which you'll never listen to.
I've never listened to them. but unlike any other version, this version came with the Amnesiac B-sides. None of the other versions featured any of the B-sides in the same way that the OK Computer reissue did. The cassettes did, but also, for some reason, they did not include Fog.
Right.
They just didn't include Fog as part of the B-sides. It's the only one they exclude, I think. And it came with a little artwork book too, but that little book did not have as much artwork as one of the two books that they also released.
It's ridiculous. Christ, well, we've got one.
So there's this. This is the Kid Amnesia book, and it's akin to a book that you would get at an art exhibition. I'm mainly talking to Steve here, which is kind of fitting, of course. It's all the various pieces of artwork that Tom and Stanley worked on during the Kid A sessions. A lot of it had never been sort of seen before, but it also included interviews with Tom and Stanley and a Kid alphabet. Yeah, which was is an exploration of things adjacent to the world of Kid A, which was written by Gareth Evans.
Is it Kid A, Kid B, Kid C?
It goes through alphabetically, yeah, and it has like one word for each thing. The interview is very interesting, actually. It features Tom saying what a nightmare he was to work with around that time and how the amount of visual art increased during that period whilst the music was like at a standstill. The second book was called, here it is, Fear Stalks the Land, a Commonplace Book. And in the same way that the other book collected all the visual art, this collects all the writing by Tom and Stanley from around the time. So it's lyrics, it's short stories, it's drafts of lyrics. But unlike the OK Computer notebook, this is printed like a poetry book rather than a reproduction of the notebook itself.
Is Fear Stalks the Land a lyric from one of those albums?
No. It's just a separate thing that they've
titled
one of the five things you can buy as part of the Kid Amnesia thing. And then, of course, there's all the exhibition merchandise, which was like the teapot and the bed sheets that I have.
I bought them all.
The pajamas. Yeah, did you get the Kid A biscuits? They looked cool. The tin they came in was nice.
Yeah.
Ate them.
Yeah, just insane.
There's some mad radio. I said there's some very dedicated Radiohead fans who will be buying all of this.
I tried. I really tried. I bought a lot of it, going to be honest. I've got the water bottle as well. It's very interesting, but the headline for a lot of people is the unheard tracks. So let's do some of those. This first one I've included as more of a curio than anything because we've heard the song itself. It's called Fog, Again, Again version.
Again, Again.
It's kind of a combination of the two versions, kind of, right?
It's a Teletubby mix, right?
The moment I realised that that's what they were doing
on
Teletubbies, it made me feel so cheated. And this is a few weeks ago, by the way.
Yeah.
But the fact that they just go again, again,
and
then show the same
five minute
video clip that they'd just shown is
crazy. Because kids are fucking stupid. Kids
they are
thick. Fucking
they are
stupid. Thick idiots. Now,
what do you think of this version of Fog?
Well, the sequels are more confusing than the Fast Saga. You've got Fog parenthesis again, Fog hyphen again again version. Just go Fog 2, Fog 3 if you're going to do it. I quite like this. I mean, it's clear that this is just another stab at something, and it's 2 minutes of just let's see if this kind of thing works.
Yep.
Maybe not. Okay, cool. Let's just put that on there. But I like the song. I like Fog. So sure, another bit of Fog.
Yeah. Another bit of Fog.
Yeah.
I think it's the middle version.
Yeah, I
agree.
In terms of qual.
Which one do we decide was top dog?
The solo piano, surely.
Solo piano version.
Yeah.
Acoustic piano lullaby.
That's version. It. That's the one. Yeah, made by AI. Yeah, sure. Okay.
Oh, God. Just included it because I thought you'd like, you know, that thing and the fact that we've heard two other versions is kind of my central point about these two reissues and why they did them, which I'll get onto in a little bit. But the meat on the bones is obviously the two forthcoming tracks. First of which is called If You Say the Word. If you fall at your happens in the branches, breaking your arms. If you stuck a rainbow, shattering.
He says in rainbows.
Right. So this is another hinge point, which I think is interesting. If you're stuck in rainbows, a shattering glass. If this makes it to Kid A, although I think probably more likely to make it to Amnesiac from the sounds of it, right?
Yeah.
In rainbows isn't called In Rainbows.
Yeah.
You don't have the In Rainbows bit in Reckoner.
Yeah.
So maybe Reckoner doesn't get made in the same way that it's made.
And then ultimately, butterfly effect, COVID doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one positive thing of if you say the word on Amnesiac, I suppose.
I think this might be one of the most nothing Radiohead songs I've heard so far.
Nah,
this is great.
Big great. Nothing.
There's some real polyrhythmic shit going nothing. On here.
Big fat stinky nothing.
I mean, the polyrhythmic stuff is really interesting. I really like the sentiment of it. The if you say the word, I'll come running, and the big kind of like the ambient swells there, and the harmonies that they pull off there are really cool. I'm not going to say, hey, this should have made the album, but I think it's really cool. It's my favorite from the reissue. It's my favorite from kind of like. Any of the reissues, I think I prefer this to Man of War and Lift. But it's interesting in what it represents, because there's also something else I think about it that I won't talk about until I talk about the next song.
Right, sure, okay.
Why so nothing? Just didn't grab you, or...?
Just kind of just a bit of a normal mid-Radiohead song. I have very little to say about it. That is what I have to say about it.
It's quite pretty.
Teebs.
It's got the Glockenspiel from No Surprises. Like it's got, you know, some of that stuff work. Going on.
Yeah, it didn't jump out at me. You're not like, oh, banger.
But you
like,
scared it's definitely by it. It didn't go like boo. Or
it didn't
like
scare
that.
Me, and no, it didn't no, no. scar me.
Okay,
but like all the textures and layers and stuff going on is really really cool.
And that's what they were about during that time, right? Textures and layers.
Yeah. I think this is great. You're right. I wouldn't want it on an album, Lucas. Do you think you really do get caught up in? Because you know it's a B-side, so therefore you're automatically predisposed to think it's not as interesting or good.
Maybe. I also did put up at the very start of my notes for all of this that I think I mentioned a couple episodes ago, I do think I'm starting to get to the Radiohead fatigue now, especially after the last thing we just did was 20 B-sides.
Okay, well, answer me this. What do you think the word he's talking about is?
The M-word.
Right, okay. I just wanted to double check. If you say the word, I'll come running, which is very bizarre.
To beat him up. If you, yeah. I think this originally was called If You Say the N-Word.
Then I'll come and beat you up.
Yeah.
Then I won't be happy.
Called. Yeah. The next song is called Follow Me Around. Thank you.
corner of the street, calling after me. Headlights on full beam, coming down the fast lane, coming.
We've heard this before.
Yeah.
On Meeting People Is Easy, right?
Yes, on Meeting People Is Easy. It's in a much different arrangement, in as much as I suppose it had an arrangement.
Right.
And like it had drums and like other guitar parts and stuff, you know. It had like Johnny going like meow, 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 meow. And it had like a drum part and Ed was making some noises and stuff. But this is stripped back. Yes?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it's a bit like, oh, I don't know what I want to say country adjacent, but I don't know what I mean, but it's not like he's putting a bit of a
folk.
But yeah, folk. He's putting a bit of like a. I know we talked about the transatlantic drawl, but he's got real like this stuff going on.
It's slightly Dylan-esque, the whole thing.
Yes, yeah, that's a good shout. And it kind of makes sense. I imagine the lyrics haven't changed much because it makes sense that they were in this stage of the career when Tom was having a terrible time with his mental health. Because when you're reading the lyrics and it's like, nowadays I get panicked, I cease to exist. I have ceased to exist. It's like he's disassociating that I'm not here. Nothing's happened. I feel absolutely nothing. The words are out of ink. The words, you know, are out of ink. It's a very dark song, isn't it?
It's very much a prototype of for I'm not here. This isn't happening.
Yeah.
From How to Disappear Completely. Yeah, for sure. I cease to exist when I get panicked. The lyrics have changed over time. Like when we knew this was going to be on the reissue, I was like, I wonder if they're going to include the lyric, did you lie to us, Tony, that got included around like the Hail to the Thief tour when they would bring it out then. And obviously there's references to Thatcher and stuff. It's probably about like New Labour. And at one point they made it about the Iraq war and Tony Blair lying and all of that stuff. It's fine. One interesting thing about it is the harmonies, which are all seem to be done in auto-tune.
Yeah, it's very digital and distorted, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some weird vocodery, weird digital, flangey, distorted business going on.
But it's not a vocoder. It's them in a very early version of Pro Tools making things pop with auto-tune onto harmonizing lines. I don't really have a better way to describe it. What I can tell you...
Isn't that quantizing?
No, that's like time. But what I can tell you is that if they had released this at the time, it would have been pioneering. It's the same thing that Imogen Heap uses on Hide and Seek. You know, what you say? You know that one?
Yeah, yeah.
With all the layers of harmonies and stuff. It's the same process, but this is 5 or 6 years before that. It's the same process that Kanye West goes on to use to popularize that auto-tune kind of sound. They would have been pioneers of that sound, and they went, nah, let's not bother.
Let's save it for Imogen.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting. They don't even, like, they don't think, oh, we've got to put this out because this is something that people have never heard before. They're just doing what they do with, like, their blinkers on, just kind of
And their blinkers on.
The blinky blunkies.
So you blinks and blinks.
Yeah.
If you say the word fog again, follow me around, to me they sound unfinished.
Yeah, I was going to. They seem a little bit more unremarkable than the OK Computer ones. Not that we're comparing the two, but, you know, I'm going to.
It is interesting that the songs off of the quote-unquote weirder albums are less interesting, and the OK Computer songs are more interesting.
Well, do you think that potentially speaks to the fact that they got two albums worth out of all the stuff that they recorded, whereas OK Computer, they just put one, so therefore they had some more complete stuff left over?
Some could argue that Amnesiac was B-sides from K
Good day, anyway. Right.
You're right.
There's an argument to be made.
I think these three from the Kid A reissue sound like a band going in with material that they had written around OK Computer and then deciding, actually, we don't do that anymore. We don't sound like this band anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they sound incomplete. They sound unfinished. They sound abandoned. Follow Me Around doesn't have anything aside from the guitar, the vocal take, and some vague experimentation around the harmonies. If you say the word, there is supposed to be a whole second verse there, I would wager, but Tomlin has only written one line of it, and then they let the rest of the verse just be instrumental, which I don't think is something that would have occurred if they'd taken the patented Radiohead fine-tooth comb over everything, you know? There's lots of other interesting stuff on that disc of the reissue. We have already heard the Pulk/Pull True Love Waits version, because remember Pulk/Pull Revolving Doors started as True Love Waits. I played that on the Kid A or adjacent episodes. Little shout out to the opening track, which is Like Spinning Plates, Why Us version. I'll play a little clip of that for you know, listeners and Lucas's benefit. Very similar to the version of Fog, because we earmarked Fog as being similar to Like Spinning Plates when we listened to it. There is the recorded version, then there's the live solo piano version. And then on this reissue, for both Fog and Like Spinning Plates, there's an in-between version where it's Tom playing the live piano and singing, but it still has a bit of the studio business on it. It's halfway between how it would have been written and how it actually finally ended up. The whole reissue was marketed as featuring, and I quote, "great strangeness suffused with worrisome portents of the future which we now inhabit."
Mm.
And it is interesting to see how much of something made 20 years ago sounds like today. But also, I think this is a different kind of reissue than the OK Computer reissue, you know? In the interview that's in the Kid A Manesia artwork book, Tom talks about the process of all of this work and how fascinating it was not to look back at the final product, but at how it arrived there. And I think that that is what comes through ultimately in all the stuff that they released for it. The focus is definitely not on the albums themselves. The albums themselves are not being presented in a new light in and of themselves. They aren't even remastered, like I said, but they're being presented alongside variations on artwork, early versions of artwork, early versions of their lyrics, unfinished scribbles, alternate takes on the songs, bits of the songs pulled out and given prominence, and unfinished songs that got abandoned in favour of what we actually got. And then OK Not OK is a celebration of that album. Right, it's a celebration of OK Computer. Kid Amnesia is an exploration of how the band work and how they arrived at Kid A rather than what it was when it got there, which is why all the stuff that we've played around the Kid A stuff is unfinished. It's all process, you know?
And they've always been very open about that, because they're a band, unlike many, who would play unfinished versions, trial versions of songs, let you hear a bit of a song that then they'll later do and redo or do a new version of. Whereas most bands, short of the odd bit you might hear live, or you'd hear some songs for an album that's upcoming earlier than, you know, you'd expect, because they're doing like a tour and they're sort of trialing some songs. For the most part, you'll be like, and these are the songs from this album. And they're concerned with the final result and not like, look at all the evolution this song went on over all the years, because they're concerned with the end result, not look at the business that led to it. And Radiohead fans, I imagine, lap that shit up.
I think that's what separates Radiohead from being just musicians and tips them over into being artists, because a lot of the discussion around painting visual art and modern art is about the process that is used to make the final kind of piece, right? You talk about brush strokes, you talk about the intention behind doing something. We talked at some point about the urinal that's in the Tate Modern, which, and you know, and that whole thing is about the process of what it takes to make a ceramic urinal. And isn't that as much effort as an equivalent piece of art would take? I think that's what Radiohead are kind of all about. They are artists. They don't see themselves as just musicians. And so this was much more an exploration of the art behind the music than the music itself, which is very interesting. It's certainly more interesting than just, here's the album remastered for the third time, some B-sides and a radio session. Do you know what I mean? Which is what you get from most bands when they do something like this.
What you're trying to say is the journey is usually the part you remember anyway. Has that not been on your TikTok every 5 seconds?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know what that is. And I'm sure it will be fully out of date by the time that this episode comes out.
Oh, of course, it already is.
Well.
Already is.
The thing about all the stuff we just talked about and how interesting that is, right, is it's not even the most interesting thing to come out of the Kid Amnesia stuff.
Definitely not.
No. Talk about the interesting bit.
Kid Amnesia was released November the 5th, 2021. And then 2 weeks later, on November 18th, 2021, Radiohead released the Kid Amnesia Exhibition, described by the band as an upside-down digital-slash-analog universe created from original artwork and recordings to commemorate 21 years of Kid A and Amnesiac. It's a video game, I suppose.
It was developed
by Radiohead and Epic Games. Or it was published by Epic Games, anyway. And it was released on PlayStation 5 and PC. And it was, and still is, free. We've all played it,
yeah.
But a little bit of context first, if you will indulge.
I will indulge.
I will.
It was initially intended as a real exhibition,
yeah,
designed by Tom and Stanley, that would be constructed from shipping containers and then toured around the world, which is typical for what you kind of do when musicians do exhibitions, like the David Bowie exhibition toured around the world, the Pink Floyd exhibition toured around the world. There's a Nick Cave one that's tour was cut short by the pandemic. It was first planned for the V&A in London, but they discovered that their idea for it wouldn't fit on their grounds. So the new plan was for the Royal Albert Hall, just across the road, with some of it kind of attached to the side. Stanley said they wanted it to be a huge red construction from the outside. Quote, "As if a brutalist spacecraft had crash-landed into the classical architecture, this astounding steel carapace would be inserted into the urban fabric of London like an ice pick into Trotsky," which is
great.
A hell of a quote. It was turned down by Westminster City Council, spoil sports, and it was then cancelled altogether due to the pandemic, at which point they shifted focus towards creating a digital exhibition.
Which, to be honest, more people will then get to see it, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Because if they'd done the thing, you would have told us that this was a thing they did, and that would have been the end of it, really. Because it would not still be up, and even if it was, would we have got, I guess we probably would have gone to it. And also, it allows them to do more stuff, because, like, you know, you couldn't do a lot of the stuff that they've done in real life.
Yeah. Well, this is what Tom York said. Tom York said it meant that the exhibition didn't have to conform to any normal rules of an exhibition or reality, which is quite a nice quote.
Yeah.
It took about 2 years to develop by Name the Machine and Arbitrarily Good Productions. And the only people from the band who were heavily involved are Tom, Stanley and Nigel. Let's discuss. You've both played it. Bring to me your thoughts. By heaven, I charge thee, speak.
I enjoyed it. Me being me, when we talked about this, Adam, off mic, I treated it very much like a game.
Very regimented.
You had to tick everything off, did you?
Yeah. I had to do all the things.
He sent me a picture with loads of crosses on it. As he went through each room.
No, but we did this. I did that for your benefit. That wasn't me ticking things off as I went through the rooms. You said, what have you seen so far? And I just quickly screenshotted the map and
There's no way that he's actually completed it. There's no way he's sat and watched every video that's in the little cinema, for instance.
No.
I watched a few of them.
Okay, good.
because I went back there a few times because I explored them. You know, I need to make sure I'd covered every square foot of that map. Absolutely. And so I went back to a lot of rooms a lot of times to make sure there wasn't like another door that I'd missed or whatever.
Lovely. I mean, it's kind of a labyrinth, right?
Mm-hmm. Not anymore for me, mate. I know my way around it. Like the back of my fucking hand.
Completely.
With a Minotaur in the centre.
With a Minotaur at the centre, just like we talked about for Amnesiac. Yeah, exactly. How did you find the game, Steve? I suppose you only found about a third of it initially.
Initially, I did, yeah. So I was like,
honestly, Steve, Adam told me about this. Yeah. How did that occur?
I came out at the end and saw the credits.
I know exactly how it occurred, which is I showed Steve a little bit of me playing it when he was round, and I went straight inside the pyramid. So Steve went, monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah,
went straight inside the pyramid.
That's correct, that's what I did.
Didn't realise you could go left and right and just went,
and see most of the content.
Yeah, yeah.
That said, like initially, yeah, so Adam did show me that bit, and I love how when you start off in the woods, don't you, in the black and white woods, and then you go and there's like a big red light, so you're drawn to like that, like a moth to the flame, and then you go and it goes,
not Lucas. Lucas always takes the non-critical path,
as in any video game, I'll always take the non-critical path, and that was clearly where the game was signposting me to go. Yeah. So I went down the path under the woods,
which is what I did this time round because Adam showed me that bit. It is the worst way to go because it's great that you go in and it introduces it. There's like a little thing on the wall, and you get that down, 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 and you're like, "Ooh,
yeah." The
cool,
first thing you really get is everything in its right place. Which
I still got that because I looped back round.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, I did the underground thing, and the audio was great, wasn't it? Fantastic. So those buzzing like lights above your head, just zoom, going across your head, just all of that stuff. And I love
it's good if you got 5.1. That's always good.
Did you not put your headphones on, or is that?
Nah, I did it. Yeah, 5.1.
Oh, headphones, dark room. Loved it.
I've never done it in headphones.
Oh, really? Oh,
5.1
light really cool.
Middle of day.
Yeah. Most of the screen is you can just see you sitting on the sofa because of the glare.
Yeah. High off your tits.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked how like when you were walking around a room that the music isn't particularly just playing. It's coming from a specific point in the room. So like you go near, it gets louder, you walk away. So you can hear music coming from down a corridor and it kind of wants you to draw you that way. Lucas therefore takes the other path to find the secret chest, get all the stuff, and then take the linear path back.
Always, every time.
It uses what the team involved in it called exploded songs. So taking the stems and separating them into different areas of each room so that if you move around the room, you can hear different parts more prominently. So a good example of that is the packed cube.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is the most prominent one, right? Where you walk through the cube of goo and you get the bass.
Oh no, that's the
Oh, that's the national anthem, the drum and bass, the drum and bass tube.
And the cube has all the little bear faces on the floor, and if you stand on those, you get a different part playing.
And if you go up the stairs as well onto the railing, you get different parts.
Oh, so you're talking about Pixel Cube. Pixel room.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember the names of the rooms now.
I know it by songs. Lucas knows it by the name of the room that's on the map.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no
I
wrong.
Found the map Always within... Safe. I found... Because I went the non-critical path, I got a QR code for the map very quickly, and then it was just then an exercise of making sure I didn't miss anything.
Yeah, because it's at the end.
And it was so clear from the
layout... have the map until the end.
It was so clear from the layout of the map and from the fact that it's a giant fucking pyramid that was that's the main quest.
Main quest.
So I saved that. I did every room that wasn't inside the pyramid first. Then I went inside the pyramid because that clearly leads towards the end.
But I think also if you were just doing it intuitively, I mean, the first time I played it, like I said,
that
you're
was
not
intuitive
to,
for me.
That's you're not
intuitive
supposed
for
to,
me, Adam.
I know, but like you're not supposed to get the map until the end, obviously. And like like you say, you are. You know, most people will be drawn by that red light, so you hear everything that's right place first. And then you're confronted with the pyramid, and you go left or right. And I think I went left first because I'm left-handed or whatever. And
down towards Ghost Chamber.
Yes. No, because Ghost Chamber is if you come back on yourself. I think it would actually be towards televisions, I think is what it is. Which is
you go through Ghost Chamber to get to televisions.
Only if you're going backwards. But that's this is the thing, right, is that there is no one way to go. It's multiple routes. It's all a loop. There's no dead end.
There's a couple dead ends. The tiny cinema's a dead end.
That is one.
And the there's one other room that's a dead end.
Technically, the rotunda is a dead end because you can walk around it forever.
Yeah.
It just keeps going and going and going. But the creative director Sean Evans said that they wanted it to be like the Library of Babel, which is like an old labyrinth, a place that instilled a feeling of being lost without feeling hopeless, and also that those initial spaces going left and right are supposed to feel, for the most part, physically possible, and it's only when you go inside the pyramid, past the Minotaur, that the spaces become more void-like and less actually physical. Physically possible. Obviously, floating around to How to Disappear Completely is probably my highlight of the whole thing. Cried the first time I did it. Just like a magical thing. But also a really good example of how the sounds are separated out. And also the In Limbo paper room, where if you stand in one corner, you'll get just the drums. And then yeah. You can move slowly and introduce other instruments into it. And that was Nigel Godrich's task, who remixed all of the songs from Kid A and Amnesiac. I know it's not been remastered on the actual CD release, but for this, it was remixed entirely into surround sound and put into that 3D space.
The Pyramid Song comes at you like a wave, and then it washes over you. Literally, it's so cool.
And then you've got all the other, like, all the little cute little characters there in there.
Well, yeah. I went in the lift, and a stick man called me a clown.
Yeah, he does insult you. You've got to watch out for him.
I love the giant ones that are just sat there under the stairs.
Horrible. And then one appears in the pyramid, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's also liminal and slightly... what's another word for recognisable, where it feels like...
Familiar?
Familiar, but in like, but not. It's like a dream. Creepy as hell, to be
I've
fair.
I've just got a photo on my phone of just...
Yeah, there's one.
Yeah,
there he is. Smiley boy.
There he is. The guiding principle of the whole thing was that they weren't allowed to use any new material. So everything had to be sourced from the Kid A Amnesiac era. So that's why all the other participants look like drawings from the Kid A booklet and stuff like that.
I recognise the stick men.
And of course, it turns out you are yourself a Minotaur.
Yeah.
Little baby
Which took
one.
Me ages to realise. It's in the motion picture soundtrack bit. It zoomed out to that big building when you've got the big Kid A artwork like in the background or whatever. And I was like, right, okay. Can't, what am I doing? Oh, I'm now in third person. Right,
Yeah. Disorienting.
I'm guessing Adam's going to tell us all the little hidden things we could find. There was a lot of things that looked like they should be interactable, and I was desperately trying to find the hidden button that makes them interactable. There's like a couple. You pick up a phone in the room with the national anthem, and you have a little phone call.
You can have a little phone call.
And there's like a couple things like that, but there was a lot of like switches all over the place, and I was like, there must be a way I can press these, and there'll be some hidden business.
A lot of it happens at you. Like I could sit and watch the television room all day because they're all clips from like around the era and stuff. And the In Limbo paper room, if you sit and watch the whole experience, like all of the artwork changes, and it's I think it's a really interesting way of like representing an album, making it fully interactive. So if you want to hear just drums from In Limbo, you can, but also if you want to hear the whole thing, move into like the center of the room, and to do it while at the same time providing the visual element, which Radiohead have always put a lot of focus into. It's really interesting. They've deconstructed the albums, put them in a physical place, and then allowed you to just kind of explore them at your leisure in whichever way you see it, which I think is very, very cool.
It's very cool, and it is a physical space, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's
exactly.
Still a virtual experience. It's still media.
I thought it was available in VR wrongly, and I was wrong, because that would have also been cool.
That would have been very cool.
I almost wish they hadn't had the map, because it made me then really make it like a game.
You're not supposed to have the map until
that's bollocks, that's Adam. That's bollocks. You scan any QR code in that entire thing, it brings
you to the catalogue, doesn't it? Yeah.
And then you click X, and in the background, and then it's the map.
I've never once scanned a QR code in any game that's ever existed.
Oh, see, I figured that was a key part of the thingy, and I was scanning every single one of them until I realised they were all just tat you can buy.
I mean, that would have been the gift shop at the end of the actual exhibition, wouldn't it? It's all very cool. And I'll tell you what else is very cool. Because it was published by Epic Games, it meant you could get Radiohead-themed items in Fortnite, Fall Guys, and Rocket League. So that's also pretty cool.
Something, isn't it?
Very un-Radiohead. But also, Bury Radiohead. That's the new way of digitally engaging with people. And they seem like, yeah, we're all for it. Put the fucking bear in the fucking Fall Guys thing.
You think of them as being this really pretentious, really self-serious band that are like from the past and aren't, you know, sort of like down with the kids and for older people. But they've done TikTok, Fortnite, Rocket League, Fortnite, and released a PlayStation game.
Yeah, exactly.
Gutted Xbox suckers.
That's Radiohead, though. I'd like to hope that if our season on them has done one thing, it's kind of proved that they are like a bit more fun than the public perception of them is.
Yeah.
Having said that, that is the last thing that Radiohead have to this point released. Recently, Phil has been doing the promotional rounds for Strange Dance, his third solo album. So, of course, he's being constantly bombarded with questions about the state of Radiohead. He has said that they've met and something in some form will come out in the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be another reissue. It's very non-committal. Ed has said it might happen, but also it might not, and that's okay. They all seem to be very focused on their own individual things, which is what we will spend the next few weeks exploring to wrap up this Radiohead season. Tom's solo stuff and soundtrack work, Ed's solo work, Johnny's soundtrack work, The Smile is all coming up on our podcast. But for the band known as Radiohead, that's it. That is either the most up-to-date version or it's the end of their story. And so on that note, before we go, the pinboard has been decimated this week. Things that we've taken off from it are Lift, Big Boots, Follow Me Around, and Say the Word. Still on the board, we've got Skirting on the Surface and Open the Floodgates. That's all that's left on the board.
That's it.
Does it feel like them clearing house a little bit?
Yeah,
it feels like they've run out of ideas, so they're just
I don't know, man. It feels like it's unlike them to do a reissue, except to go like, well, here's all these songs that you know we had, and now you can have them. You know. They are no longer our responsibility. You don't need to keep thinking, will Follow Me Around be on the next Radiohead album? Are they finally going to release Big Boots?
Who is Will Follow Me Around?
Well, it's certainly not the person that we're going to dedicate this episode to, because the person that we're going to dedicate this episode to is Sam Holland. There you go. Thank you for subscribing to the Biggest Mates tier. This episode is yours. And I think it's probably slightly too long to read an email, but that's fine. We'll wrap up some emails at a later date. It brings us to the end of another episode. Was it music?
Yep.
Some of it was video
games by Lana Del Rey, which is music. Thank you very much for listening. Our next episode is out next Monday, and we'll be watching Radiohead's performance at Glastonbury 2017. So come and join us for that. But before you do, come and let us know what you think of these Radiohead reissues. Did you buy them? Which version did you buy? Which of the 10 versions of the Kid A Amnesia reissue did you buy? Let us know. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook these days at What Is Music Pod. We're at TikTok at What Is Music. And if you'd like to send in something a little bit longer, we'll read it out on the show at some point. You can email us whatismusicpod@gmail.com. And if you liked what you heard here and thought, I'd like to hear more of that, head over to our Patreon page where you'll find all kinds of extra podcast shows. One where we are revisiting Manic Street Preachers. One where we explore all different kinds of artists, genres and eras of music to make themed playlists. There's some bonus commentaries. There's some music discussion episodes. There's ad-free episodes of this show. There's access to a great Discord community. And treacle! Head to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in the show notes for up to 2 podcast episodes every single week. There are also other ways that you can support us if you'd like to. You could buy some of our merchandise. We should do teapots and biscuits, really, at whatismusicpod.redbubble.com. And send us a little one-off donation if you'd like over on ko-fi.com, which is ko-fi.com/whatismusic. The best way to support us is doing what you're doing right now, which is just listening to our show. You can rate the show, you can subscribe to the show, you can share it with your friends, all of the stuff that all the other podcasts ask you to do. We are eternally grateful for all of it. That about does it. Thanks again for listening. But before you go, please, don't leave me high. Don't leave me. Bye.
Don't leave me. So long.